This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky, January 2013. We have a wonderful part of the heavens visible to us in the evening in January. Perhaps the most recognised constellation of all is Orion the Hunter. His upper left star is Betelgeuse, the lower right, Rigel, two of the brightest stars in the northern sky. The three stars that make up his belt act as a wonderful pointer, really, or pointers towards some of the other objects. If you come up towards the right from those three stars, we come into the constellation of Taurus the Bull, and we first come to the Hyades cluster. The bright star there is called Aldebaran. It's not part of the cluster. It's about halfway between ourselves and the cluster itself. If you carry on, you come to that beautiful little star cluster called the Pleiades. Conversely, if you go down to the lower left of the three stars of Orion's belt, you come to the brightest star in the northern sky, which is Sirius. If you've got binoculars, it's well worth looking at Sirius and then dropping down a few degrees. You should pick up a rather nice little open cluster called M41. It's one of my favourites. Most of the stars are blue. There's a lovely red giant star, a lovely colour contrast in the centre. To the left of Orion is a constellation that almost no one's ever heard of. It's called Monoceros, and that's because there's almost nothing there. I can only think of two things. There is, in fact, a very nice nebula called the Rosette Nebula, and also, in fact, it's the home of the nearest black hole that we know of to the Earth. And, in fact, with my colleagues here at Jodrell Bank, we discovered its location precisely back in 1976. Up to the left of Monoceros is almost looks like a single star, but there's a second star just up to its right. That's called Procyon, and that's the constellation called Canis Minor, as opposed, of course, to Canis Major, of which Sirius is the brightest star. Moving upwards from Procyon, we come to two bright stars, Pollux first and then Castor. They're the heads of the heavenly twins, Gemini. Their legs and bodies move down towards the upper left part of Orion. Again, close to the legs of the upper of the two little men is a nice cluster called M35. Now, that part of the sky is along the plane of the Milky Way, and carrying on in the same direction, we come to a bright star called Capella, yellowish star, which is the brightest star in the constellation of Auriga. And in Auriga, there's some very nice open clusters as well, M36, M37, and M38, all worth looking at with binoculars or a small telescope. Just one other constellation to mention. Moving down to the left from Castor through Pollux, we come to a very faint constellation called Cancer. In it is a very lovely, quite large in angular size open cluster. It's called the Beehive Cluster, or Prisipae, and that again is well worth looking at in binoculars on a dark night, particularly when there's no moon, when of course we see fainter objects far better. So what about the planets this month? Well, Jupiter, of course, is the highlight, really, of the whole of this month, and more of a little bit about it later on. It's well up in the eastern sky after sunset. It crosses the meridian, and that's when it's about due south and highest in the sky, at 9 o'clock on January the 1st, and as early as 7:30 by the end of January. It's now at the highest part of the ecliptic, and that includes the constellations of Taurus the Bull and Gemini. As a result, its elevation when due south is getting on for 60 degrees, the best it could ever be. So this year and the next apparition, about a year and a bit, are the best times to see it for quite some time. It shines at magnitude -2.7, and it's about 5 degrees to the upper right of the star Aldebaran. It's currently still in retrograde motion, moving quite slowly westwards in the sky. It does so until the very end of the month, when it starts moving towards the east again, moving back over the top of the Hyades cluster. So it's actually staying pretty much in the same place the whole of the month. Its angular diameter is actually dropping a little bit now because it's past its opposition and nearest point to the Earth, from 47 down to about 43 arc seconds. There is still lots to see with a small telescope. There are bands and zones, dark bands, bright zones on the disk, and you may spot the great red spot. And you also will see up to four of the Galilean moons as they weave their way around the giant planet. Well, Saturn, that's a morning object, so it's visible well above the eastern horizon before dawn. The magnitude remains constant, about plus 0.6 magnitudes. The angular size increases slightly from 16.2 to 17 arc seconds. It's lying in the constellation of Libra, the scales. Now, there's good and bad news. The good news is that the rings have now opened up to over 19 degrees to the line of sight. That's their best for about 6 years. So there's a chance of spotting Cassini's division, a gap in the rings, if the seeing's good. Now, the bad thing is that Saturn is now moving down to the most southerly part of the ecliptic, and so its elevation is really not that high. So we're seeing it through much more atmosphere than we were doing back in about 2003, when it was higher up. On the 30th, the very end of the month, in fact, it's at sort of right angles to the Sun, so you can actually see the shadow of the planet on the ring system. It's always a wonderful planet to have a look at, and as we get towards the end of the month, it's becoming better and better to observe. Well, Mercury was essentially invisible to the unaided eye all month. On the very first of the month, you might just spot it well down to the left of Venus, just before dawn. At the very end of the month, you might spot it down to the lower left of Mars, just after sunset. But really, it's not worth the effort. Mars. Mars has been around for a very long time. It's been moving eastwards, and that sort of meant it stayed roughly where it is in terms of the horizon just after sunset for a long time. It's on its way out now. At the beginning of the month, you can see it at about 10 degrees elevation in the southwest, about 45 minutes after sunset. But by the end of the month, that elevation is only 6 degrees. The angular size, just over 4 arc seconds, is so small, you're not really going to have a chance of seeing any markings on its salmon pink disk, unless you've got access, perhaps, to the Hubble Space Telescope. Well, finally, Venus. It's now getting closer to the Sun and nearing the end of its morning apparition. Its magnitude of minus 3.9 stays the same, basically, during the month, and the angular size drops slightly from 10.8 to 10.1 arc seconds. As it does so, though, the percentage illumination increases from 95 to 97%, and these two effects cancel out, and that's why the magnitude doesn't change. So it can be seen still before dawn, but as we gradually get to the end of the month, the elevation will be lower and lower, and finally it'll be lost in the sun's glare. Well, what about some highlights? Well, as I've said, January is the third of three great months during which to view Jupiter. It's high in the ecliptic, at a high elevation when due south. It's looking somewhat different than it was a few years ago. The north equatorial belt has become quite broad. The great red spot is currently a shade of pink, but can quite easily be seen as a large feature in the south equatorial belt. Jupiter was at opposition on the 3rd of December, so as I've said earlier, it's now crossing the meridian due south earlier in the evening. Ideal for observing. The features in the Jovian atmosphere have been changing quite significantly over the last few years. In fact, for a while, the south equatorial belt vanished completely, but it's now come back to its normal, fairly wide state. And in the night sky page on the Jodrell Bank website, I've made a little chart showing the main features of the surface, and that's based upon an image I took with a telescope just a few days before recording this program. I've also given, on the night sky page, a list of times in the evening when the great red spot is basically facing us. It's on the central meridian. So you can have a look, for example, on the 1st of January, if you're still around and awake, 2020. On the 30th, at 19:18. So the list of good times to see the red spot. On the 6th of January, about an hour before dawn, you can actually see Saturn and a nice waning crescent moon lying below the star Spica in Virgo. In January, Jupiter is lying between the Hyades and the Pleiades. But I notice when looking at the star charts, it's actually quite close to an asteroid called Vesta. In fact, Vesta will only be 2 degrees away from Aldebaran, the bright star in the Hyades cluster that we see. And so you could see it with a pair of binoculars. Just put Aldebaran to the lower right, perhaps, of your field of view, and you should see Vesta higher up. Again, a little chart to show you exactly where it is during the month. Probably the best time to look for it are on the 10th and 11th of January, because it's then very close to a star having almost identical brightness. It will look like a nice double star, and that will make it be more easy to spot, I suspect. On Jan the 10th, just before dawn, you can see Venus and a thin, waning crescent moon. On the 13th, you can have a look, perhaps for the last time this month, for Mars, and that's along with a waxing, very, very thin crescent moon. At that time, there's a chance of seeing Earth shine. It's the dark side of the moon illuminated by light reflected off clouds on the Earth. Can look rather lovely. Well, that's it for the month. We've still got nice long nights. They have been pretty cold, actually, in the last few days as I record this. But let's hope we get some slightly warmer nights, but still ones that are clear, so you can go out and have a look. And by the way, if you haven't got a telescope to have a look at Jupiter, now is really the time to get one. They don't cost a vast amount of money, and there's some wonderful things you can see. And just seeing the bands and the red spot of Jupiter, and perhaps four of its moons at one time, is a lovely sight. So all the best.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now John Field tells us what you can see in the southern night sky.
Kia ora and welcome to the January Jodcast, coming to you from Carter Observatory. January 2013 finds the Earth still here after another failed round of doomsday predictions. Our evening sky is dominated by the planet Jupiter, along with the constellations of Orion, Canis Major and Taurus in our northern sky. Appearing as a bright white star, Jupiter continues to move in front of the distant stars that form the constellation of Taurus the Bull. Jupiter was at its best in early December and will slowly fade in brightness as it moves away from the Earth. Taurus is one of the zodiac constellations, a group of constellations that the ecliptic passes through. Over the year, the Sun appears to move in front of these constellations as the Earth completes its annual orbit around it. The Bull's Head appears as a V of stars with two horned tips stretching towards our northern horizon. The red star Aldebaran, along with the compact V of stars called the Hyades, mark his head. The Pleiades mark the Bull's back and can be found to the west of his head. A cluster of at least 7 stars visible to the eye in the summer evening sky, they will twinkle markedly after sunset. By midnight, the Earth's surface and atmosphere would have cooled, and the twinkling will decrease, and the view should become steadier. In Greek mythology, Taurus is the embodiment of the great god Zeus. Gemini and Cancer are two other zodiac constellations in our summer sky. The bright stars Castor and Pollux mark the heads of the twins, and they can be found in the northeast after sunset. Gemini lies on the edge of the Milky Way, and the regions around these stars contain a number of faint and distant stars. Within 1 degree of Castor, there are 5 faint galaxies that will need a larger telescope to discover. The December radiant of the Gemini meteor shower is also near to this star. Pollux, the brighter of the two stars, is the 17th brightest star in our night sky. It is about 35 light years away from us. Nearby to Eta Geminorum is M35, an open cluster that under good conditions can be seen with the unaided eye. Catalogued in 1764 by Charles Messier, this cluster had been observed prior to this date. Binoculars and wide-field telescopes are the best way to view this lovely open cluster. Cancer the Crab is a fainter constellation of 5 stars, and at the centre a naked-eye cluster of stars called the Praesepe, or the Beehive. This large and bright cluster appears as a nebula to the unaided eye, and binoculars will reveal individual stars in this cluster. Galileo viewed this cluster with his telescope in 1610, being the first human to see it as a cluster of stars. Orion the Hunter, our summer constellation, has a large number of bright stars and sights with binoculars and telescopes of any size. This bright grouping of stars dominates our summer evening sky, and to us southern hemisphere observers hangs upside down. Orion's brightest stars, Rigel, Betelgeuse and Bellatrix, along with 3 stars of his belt, form an easily seen pattern in the evening sky. Well placed for viewing is the Orion Nebula, which can be found in the middle of Orion's sword. To the unaided eye, this nebula appears as a fuzzy star. If you have binoculars or a small telescope, they will reveal a bat-shaped cloud. A 100mm or greater telescope will reveal a number of stars in and around the nebula, including a tight group of 4 stars called the trapezium. The ultraviolet radiation from the brightest star in the trapezium is illuminating the surrounding cloud for a region of about 20 light years. The nebula is estimated to be about 1,300 light-years distant, and stars are still forming in the stellar nursery. Marking Orion's left foot is Rigel, the brightest star in Orion, although it is listed as Beta, the second brightest star in the constellation. It is the sixth brightest star in the night sky, shining at magnitude 0.18. To the east of Orion are its two hunting companions, Canis Major, the large dog, and Canis Minor, the small dog. The brightest star in our night sky, Sirius, marks the collar of Canis Major. For us, the dog is lying on his back with his feet up in the air. Sirius is about 8.7 light years away, about 26 times brighter than the Sun. Below Canis Major is Canis Minor with Procyon marking his tail. But halfway along the line from Betelgeuse to Procyon, binoculars reveal a rectangular cluster of stars embedded into a faint nebula called the Rosette. Almost overhead in the early evening sky is the second brightest star in the night sky, Canopus. Measurements from the Hipparchus spacecraft put this star to be 310 light years away. This star has an estimated luminosity of 15,000 times that of our Sun. For early rises, you will see Saturn rise before the Sun. Through 2013, it will move through Libra and be better placed for viewing during our autumn and winter months. The planet's rings are slowly tilting towards us, and this will give us better views of the rings later this year. We hope you have clear skies during these summer nights and take the opportunity to view some of the delights of our southern skies.